What's up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 69, and as always, this episode is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon whenever you're going to buy something there, because that helps us to keep our podcast going, keep the website going, so we can bring all the content to you guys and hang out and have a good time. As always, Bob is with us. How you doing, Bob?
That's like the best intro you've ever done, I think.
Oh, man.
You're like on it today.
I've got compliments.
Did you have a coffee or something?
I worked 10 hours. So I'm really awake.
You're like on. You're like, you know, yeah. This is how like you should normally be, then you're never like this. So it's good.
So but, we just need to like recreate this all the time.
I know, right? So we'll just jump right in, I guess. We'll jump right into our reviews this week. And we took a look at two very different products. One is a solid-state drive, and this comes from Crucial, and it is their MX300. And there's a couple really interesting things about this solid-state drive. One is that it's made to be very affordable. Crucial's MX series, since the start, has been made to be affordable. They want to get SSDs in the hands of more people. And this is a drive that's definitely going to do that. The second thing is that this is the first drive from Crucial to use 3D NAND. So that's a big deal, because the only other company in the consumer level that was putting out drives with 3D NAND was Samsung. And that was with their, I believe it's their 850 Evo, which is pretty much the most popular SSD out there. It still is. So Crucial is coming along with their 3D NAND product, and this is their first one. But instead of making the high-end drive like Samsung did, they went the other route and made something really affordable that kind of fits that mid-range when it comes to SSDs. And I think that's a great thing, because again, not everybody needs that super high-performance enthusiast drive. They just need something that obviously is going to be faster than your typical hard drive and come in at a really good price. So I think they did that with this drive. Currently, it's only available in 750 gigabyte version.
It's kind of different.
It's different because it's the NAND packages. I go into detail why in the actual review, but because of the way the NAND packages are set up, that's why. So
they're not 50 size works for it better.
Yes.
Or whatever.
We're not actually sure what the other range of capacities will be. They are coming. We know that from Crucial, but we don't know, you know, what they're actually going to be, because they are going to be different, because the way the 3D NAND, the die sizes and everything like that, the way they're designed, it's totally different than what we're used to, put it that way.
So they're working on the new sizes probably.
Yes. But it's really cool because this is where SSD technology is going. You're slowly going to move away, just like any technology, from the older technology. So you have the planar NAND, which is pretty much almost all SSDs besides the ones that use this 3D NAND. That's what they all use, and that NAND is great. It's very fast and everything like that, but it uses a lot of power. And this is less power hungry. Again, it's 3D NAND, so you can stack it, so you have a lot less space being taken up as well. So I just think it's really cool because you get to, you know, this is the first of its kind for Crucial, and I think they did a really great job. It has read and write speeds of 530 megabytes a second and 510 megabytes a second. So still very fast, obviously definitely faster than your typical SSD. The 750 gigabyte version is $199. Has 3-year warranty. So, it's a solid, I need an SSD type of SSD. It's not the super high performance, but it's going to get the job done, and it's going to use a lot less power than all the other SSDs that are out there as well.
For sure. A couple questions. How did it perform compared to other drives?
So most drives that we've tested in the past year or so, when it comes to their read and write speeds, usually a lot of them max out at like 540, 550. So this was in the 520, 530. So it's a little bit below that. But again, 10 megabytes a second, 20 megabytes a second different isn't huge. And in the right speed, it did really good. Most drives, again, high performance drives, are anywhere from, you know, say, I would say 500 to 530, something like that. And this performs right around 500 in most of our tests. So it's a good, like I said, it's good overall drive. It's not as fast as the fastest SATA SSDs that we've tested. But again, the 20 to 30 megabytes a second difference isn't going to kill you.
No, probably not very noticeable.
Yeah, the only issue, and this is an issue we have with, this is a the 3D NAND is TLC based. Okay. So with TLC based NAND, you do have an issue with sustained writing. So what that means is if you're, you know, when you write data, a lot of times it's a lot of small files. It's a lot of bursting, you know, it's a lot of bursts. Which you'll never notice any type of slowdown whatsoever because it's reading new files or writing new files all the time. But if you're transferring one large file, it will go down. The performance will go down. That's in any TLC drive. So performance kind of gets not, I would say, cut in half, but it gets cut down pretty considerably. But that's with any TLC drive.
A result of the type of NAND.
Yes. But again, like I said, it is a really good drive. I like the price point. This is definitely one that I would recommend.
The other thing I was going to ask is, I noticed in page three, it's only 698 gigabytes registered out of 750.
Yeah, that's how,
like, a pretty significant.
It's technically drive. 750 gigabytes. It's like any drive. So if you would get a 750 gigabyte any drive, it would actually be 698 gigabytes of usable space.
I've noticed that it can differ between drives, though.
Not much, because if you look at the actual bytes, it is 750. That's how most drives are. So like if you look at, say, like a terabyte drive.
Yeah.
You're usually getting, like, I forget how much it is, but they're usually almost all the same.
Okay.
When it comes to that. But yeah, that's like any drive. So again, if you are getting, say, a, you know, like any drive, you're really not getting a full terabyte of actual data storage.
Right.
You're getting close to that, but not the total.
Yes.
Yes.
But I just thought that it struck me as being quite a bit less, so that I don't know. I guess I had never noticed that it was that significantly large.
Yeah, if you look at a lot of SSDs, they're all set up that way for the most part. And in all of our SSD reviews, we do say how much actual usable space that you get.
Yeah, which is, you know, most important thing.
Yes. But yeah, again, great drive. Great price. And the biggest thing that I took out of this, too, is it's solid across the board. And this is their first generation 3D NAND products. That says a lot, too. It says they took their time and they really made it work. Because you know as well as I do, first generation products of a new technology don't normally work that well at all.
No. Usually they're rushed and they're put out before they're ready.
Yes. So they took their time with this. Again, they only launched in one capacity for right now. And we'll see other capacities come along. But, I definitely would recommend this drive if you're looking for a solid SSD.
Cool.
Sure. And the second product is a very budget-conscious product. And this comes from Cooler Master. And this is their Devastator 2. And what it is a keyboard and mouse combo that gives you a gaming keyboard and gaming mouse, and, of course, in a combo, for only $30, which is kind of hard to believe, but again, you're not getting, say, a mechanical keyboard, and you're not getting a super high-end mouse. You're getting kind of just a basic set. Both of the mouse and the keyboard both have backlighting, so they look really cool. Cooler Master has done something really cool with the keyboard, is they've actually developed a new type of key called their Memcanical keys. So what those actually are is the keys are designed to give you sort of that feedback like a mechanical keyboard would, but they're not actually mechanical keys. That just gives you a better feel, and that makes a whole lot of difference. You know as well as I do that we love mechanical keyboards, and we love them for their feel, for that feedback. While this is not a mechanical keyboard, that feedback will still obviously make me use this keyboard over another, say, membrane keyboard.
So it's just it's a superior dome switch.
Yes.
Okay.
So what it actually is, it's a rubber dome that has a plunger that gives you 4 millimeters of travel. So it just gives you more of a mechanical feel. And what's really cool is that the these are compatible with Cherry MX keytops. Keycaps. So if you wanted to, or maybe you're at a LAN party and you maybe won some of these, they give these keycaps away all the time. Yeah. They'll fit on these. So you can kind of outfit this with those keycaps if you want. I think it's a great
life out of your board.
Yeah. I think it's a great little combo. I like what they did with the keys. They really spent a lot more time, I would say, on the keyboard than the mouse. The mouse is very basic. I'm not a huge fan of it. But again, for $30, you can't complain about really much of anything with this.
Yeah, this sounds like a great first-timer setup. You know, you just spent a whole bunch of money on your rig, monitor, everything else, you know, save some money and grab a cheap keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, and this will get
you... But one that's still nicer than just your basic.
Yeah, and I can't stress enough of how good this feels. So I directly compared it to the TD Esports Commander, which is the same thing. Same price, $30 keyboard and mouse. The keyboard on this feels much, much better.
Nice.
And again, it is backlit, only one color, and there's no brightness settings or anything like that. Red backlit on both the keyboard and mouse. They offer 3 different colors: red, blue, and green. Of course, you have to pick the color that you want, and that's the only color that you get.
Yeah, but at $30, what do you expect?
Yeah, at $30, again, you can't complain. As much as there, you know, we can say it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. You can't program any of the keys on any of the keyboard or mouse or anything like that. But again, $30. So this will definitely get you in the game. It will, you know, if you are like you said, spent all your money on your system and you're like, I totally forgot to get a keyboard and mouse. Now I need something. Yeah. This will give you something that will work and will look good at the same time. So, and will feel good. At least the keyboard will, for sure. So,
and it definitely gives you that like completed like gamer system feel, you know, so you're not sitting there with office products.
Yes, for sure. Or like the parents' keyboard, you know, or something like that. Definitely. So yeah, definitely would recommend this product as well. And again, $30, perfect, kind of like maybe gift to a younger brother or something, you know, something like that. So yeah, so definitely check out both of those reviews.
I could see that being really popular, maybe with like LAN places that you can go and use their computers, you know.
Yes, basically. Totally. Like that. And like I said, it gives you both keyboard and mouse, and I like that because it just like as you say, completes the system.
Yep.
So yeah. So talking about Cooler Master, we'll move on to Case Mod Friday, and this is one of the only case mods that we featured that makes use of Cooler Master's Master Case 5 case, which is one of my favorite cases to come out recently. Just for the fact that it's such a solid case. We actually use it here as one of the cases for our main test systems. And this build is called the Master X5. And it is a really awesome and unique build in the Master Case 5. You know, it just looks kind of like this a simple build if you look at it. But we link the build log. And if you go through the build log, the builder really kind of just disassembled everything and rebuilt it from the ground up. And did a really, really good job. Great water cooling. Tons of radiators. I think there's 3 radiators in this case. Yeah. 2 360s in the bottom. And I believe a 240 in the back.
That's a custom shroud in the back, right?
Yes, custom shrouds on the front, the back, the top, and both side panels are also custom.
Nice.
He made everything. Yeah. He made all of the cool... metallic parts on this he changed the motherboard so it's actually vertical. He did a lot of cool stuff in this. Yeah, so this is like something that I looked at and I was like, oh, it doesn't look super cool like some of these ones that we've been featuring lately.
Yeah,
but if I went through the build log and I was like, wow, he did so much work on this, and it's just, it looks awesome. It's a really, really cool build. And he used a lot, I think all Alpha Cool cooling parts, and we did our whole water cooling 101 on those parts.
Aquatooning parts.
Yeah, Aquatooning parts.
Yeah, so Phobia and Alpha Cool.
Yeah, so I figured you'd like that as well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very familiar.
And I do like the color. It's sort of like a...
Like a honey?
I would, yeah. A honey, or I was going to say like an oil color.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Yeah, it's a cool build. I wouldn't say that it's my favorite design, but this sort of shape and mod definitely appeals to a lot of people.
Yes.
And it's really well done, regardless of how I feel personally about, you know, the way it came together. It's really well built.
One thing that I really liked about this is it brought me back to, like, the old modding days where he did install a LCD, not like a graphical LCD, but just, like, the normal, you know, old-school LCDs that a lot of people had in their mods that will show you, like, certain information and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was cool. Really, really cool as well.
Throwing it back.
Yeah, so there's a ton of photos in this, and he has videos, and we do link to the build log, which if you want to really appreciate this build, definitely check out the build log. And of course, we have a full section of all of these. We have doing this. I actually look back, and we've been doing it for like almost 4 years now.
That's awesome.
Of featuring builds every week. So a lot of builds in there. Definitely check it out if you're looking for inspiration or just want to look at a ton of cool mods. We have a bunch of stuff there. So definitely check that out. But yes, We'll move on to news this week, and we have a good amount of graphics card news. A lot of it comes from AMD because we're getting closer and closer to the actual release of the RX 480, which should be next week, what we've heard. A lot of these cards are in reviewers' hands now, and somebody decided to take the card apart. And it was the Sapphire card. So they're all reference design. So they're all pretty much the same design. But the somebody took apart the Sapphire reference RX 480. And this is the closest look we've ever gotten at the card and the cooling solution. So that tells us a lot about the card.
Yeah.
So the first thing that we see is we do have, of course, the Ellesmere silicon, and if you actually take a look at it, it appears to have a smaller die than previous generation Tonga, but a similar package size. And of course, it uses, I think, twice as many transistors, which means because of the decreased architecture and process, you have a lot more in there, which that's what obviously makes these new cards much more powerful. The actual memory, of course, it's GDDR5. It's made by Samsung. And we have, you know, one HDMI and three DisplayPort 1.4 connectors. We can also see the six-phase VRM in there. So it's a five plus one phase VRM in there. So this is going to be kind of a powerful little card, I think. And that it should leave a lot more room for overclocking with this card as well.
That was my thought, that this is going to be one of those little gems, you know?
And from what we've heard and all, there wasn't a whole lot of news on it, but I saw a lot of postings about it, is that the new AMD software will have GPU overclocking built into it.
Nice.
So I think it's going to be a big thing with this card.
You shouldn't need aftermarket overclocking.
Correct. Secondly, we get a really good look at the stock cooler. And the stock cooler is a lot different from what we've seen before because this is a much lower power card because of the architecture and all of that. So all it is just a big aluminum heat sink with a copper core, no heat pipes, nothing like that,
yeah.
No vapor chamber, it doesn't need anything like that, and it's just a single lateral blower fan, that's it.
It's a big heatsink.
Yeah, so basically this card's going to run cooler, at least it should, because they're not using this, you know, extensive cooling solution or anything like that.
I'm also thinking that you can do some serious damage with water cooling on this.
Oh, yeah.
Being that it's such a simple cooler, you can probably really drop your temps and really push your overclock just with water cooling on these.
Yeah,
I think that this is probably the most intriguing card that's coming out, including the... NVIDIA cards.
Yeah, I think it's because we don't know exact performance yet, but
yeah.
I think that the possibility is there, and it's so low cost, which we're going to get to, is that there's going to be two models. There's a 4 gigabyte and 8 gigabyte. Only difference, just as when they announced the 480, the 4 gigabyte is going to be $199, and then the 8 gigabyte is going to be $229. So $30 premium on
really
the
8 gigabyte. Bad, though. 8 gigs is impressive.
Yeah, so it's not going to. I would like to see the actual performance difference when reviews come out on that. Yeah. But that's going to make it hit such a sweet spot, especially because it's going to be under the $249 price point. And we're still waiting to see if NVIDIA does release a GTX 1060. We would think that it would be coming soon to kind of combat this lower end. Because right now, once this card comes out and the other RX series cards do come out, NVIDIA is not going to have a lower end to really compete here.
The only thing you can do is go back to 9 series, and we can't suggest that to anybody.
Yes, especially, I mean, power reasons, and of course these new, all the new generation cards are so much more powerful.
Yeah.
It would be hugely dumb for anybody to buy a current generation card right now.
Yeah.
You know,
you'd basically be throwing your money away.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So I definitely think that this, especially since the two of these are what, that's a fact that it's going to beat the 980 Ti, right? That was proven.
Yes.
Through 3DMark, right? Yeah, I think two of these, although that does bump that up to 460 when we thought it was going to be 400.
Yes.
But
still 460 though for something that's that powerful. The only thing is again, when we talked about that, is the scaling.
You are dependent on Crossfire.
Yes, so that's something that we'll have to see as time goes on, and obviously when reviews come out, we'll see how it performs.
Somebody will do huge compatibility testing with, you know, back testing with older games and everything new, and we'll find out.
Yes, for sure. Also, talking about the RX series, the Radeon RX 470 is said to be $149. And this sits right below the 480 in the RX series stack. And the 4 gigabyte version will be $149, $179 for the 8 gigabyte version.
I'm loving the 4 and the 8 gigabyte possibility, because that's like you're at 1080 or you're at 4K, and we've got an option for both of you.
Yes. Well, the 470 is made specifically for 1080p gamers,
right?
But again, if you are a 1080p gamer, you don't have a 4K display, you don't want to play on 4K, if you're a 1080p gamer, $179 for something that's going to play games for, you know, no problem?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty good, I feel.
Yeah, well, I think that the 4 gigabyte version would be fine at 1080. Yeah. You're not going to use 4 gigs. 4 gigs was a lot when 1080 was, you know, I mean, it still is huge, but what? Think back to the 7 series, 4 gigs was a huge amount of memory.
Yeah.
And we were on 1080 then, and it was no problem. I see 8 gig being more like, that's a 4K number, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So even though this isn't designed necessarily to run 4K games, for, you know, 4K displays, 8 gigs is going to be something you're going to want to have. So
yeah, I just think that these prices are just pretty awesome, I think. Yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
And I think that this, again, for AMD is going to be a big deal. They're going to get a lot of the low-end gamers on their side again, and I think it's going to do a lot for their business.
I think that they are going to start to come back with this.
Yes.
I think that the crucial thing is going to be the next step, what they do after this. This is going to do great things for them, and where they take it after this is going to be critical for their future.
Yes, for sure. Moving over to the other side, the NVIDIA side, we have some details on the GeForce GTX 1080M.
Nice.
So a lot of people were wondering if it's going to be a full version of the 1080 in there or not. It doesn't look like it's going to be. But the 1080M will, of course, replace the GeForce GTX 980 mobility card. And that was actually the full version. They released a 980M, and then later, I think it was not that long ago, maybe less than a year ago, they announced a new 980 mobility, which was the full version in a smaller package, of course.
Yes.
So, of course, this is going to be the new version. So it's going to move down to 14 nanometer, of course, and it should deliver better per core performance and faster clocks. That's kind of the big thing. Yeah. And it should have a clock speed of 1442 megahertz base with the GPU boost up to 1645.
I like that.
And the memory should be running, like turning out a bandwidth of 256 gigabytes a second. That's compared to the 980's 224. Yeah. And it should have around the same TDP, which is 150 watts, which is pretty low. And there was a 3D Mark score or 3D Mark benchmark, a supposed 3D Mark Firestrike benchmark released. And its score in the graphics score was 16,893. In comparison, a GTX 980 mobility card scores around 13,000. So you can see the difference there. Pretty significant difference. But I would expect to see, there's, from what we know, there's already notebooks based on this out. They were at Computex. They should be releasing very soon. As soon as the day NVIDIA announces the mobility, it will be these. They'll be available, awesome. From what we know. So it's interesting, and it's good because this again just takes mobile gaming to the next step.
Yeah, 4K is now reachable.
Yes, for sure, and you don't need some system that's going to be, huge to do it. So
you don't need like a tower with a screen attached to it, essentially.
Yeah. So that's exciting, and again, we're just waiting for those two launches from NVIDIA. The 1080M, and of course, if they're going to do a 1060, something like that, we should see those here very soon. Also, talking about graphics cards, so we talked about it last week. We talked about the GPU or the modified GPU controversy, and this was that a lot of people discovered that both Asus and MSI were sending out review samples that were modified. And what we mean by that is they were put in overclocking mode by default. So when the reviewer got the card, it was in overclocking mode, which is the highest clock mode of the card.
Yeah.
In contrast, if you would buy the card at the store, it would be in gaming mode, which is lower clocks. Now, you could install the third-party software from Asus or MSI and put it in overclocking mode if you want, but a lot of people felt this was kind of deceptive, and it was a big deal, and a lot of people were kind of mad. That you needed third-party software to enable it and all this kind of stuff, and that maybe the reviews were a little biased because nobody really noticed it, you know.
Yeah.
Things like that. We talked about it a lot last week. So Asus responded last week. MSI responded this week. And again, they pretty much said the same thing that Asus said, is that, you know, that these clock speeds are available to you. You have to install the software if you want. But they did one better. And they've actually released BIOSes for these cards that automatically put them in overclocking mode, so you don't have to download the software or use their MSI overclocking app if you don't want to.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a good response. Again, I think that that's kind of the only response that they could have because they are still like, you know, doing the shady thing of giving the highest clock card out to a reviewer. And it's obviously going to score better than a card that has a default clocks.
Yeah. Trying to pass it off as a standard card when it's not quite.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
kind of makes you wonder why aren't they just setting the clocks at these speeds anyways, then?
What they say is that their gaming mode clocks are the best performance per watt thing. But again, it's just kind of deceptive because another company will send out a card that's on the stock clocks or default clocks or whatever it may be, and it's going to score maybe 1% to 5% lower. But again, as we talked about last week, if you're looking at performance graphs and you want the best performance card, you're going to buy the one that's at the top of the performance graph.
Yeah, I mean, everyone just looks at the graph and kind of just pick the best card, right?
Yeah, so it is kind of deceiving, and it's good that this has been kind of brought out, and that's MSI's response. We saw Asus's response last week. And an interesting thing is that EVGA is trying to cash in on this controversy.
Yeah.
They have put out a press release and a little post on their website that with EVGA, what you see is what you get, which means that none of their cards that they send out to reviewers are fake. They don't put up fake reviews. They send out, they don't send out cards with tweaked clock speeds. Everything is what you see is what you get. And I think it's great of EVGA to do that. And it's great that they're not one of these companies that are doing the kind of deceptive practices, what do you want to call it?
Yeah. The smartest thing they could possibly do, just jump on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So we'll move on from GPUs to talk about desktop processors. And it looks like we'll see the first Kaby Lake processors coming in December. Kaby Lake, of course, is that comes after Skylake. So Skylake is currently what we're on. That is your i7-6000 series.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's i7-6700Ks, yeah, 6700Ks, you know, all the way down the line.
Yeah.
That's what's out right now. Now, this is their third step in their process architecture optimization strategy. So if you remember, I think it was last year, Intel changed their strategy from a tick-tock, which it's been forever, to process architecture and then optimization. So, you know, whenever we change, the first step is process. So you move down to, these are 14 or 16. I can't remember. 16? 14.
I think they're 14.
I can't remember because we talk about graphics that are down to 14 and 16. Yeah. Anyways, you move down in the process. That's the first step. And then the next year you change the architecture.
Yeah.
And then you finally optimize that architecture. That's their new strategy. And I think it's a good strategy. It's a 3-year strategy typically. So we had Broadwell.
It's great for selling chips. It's great for selling chips.
Oh, yeah. So with this, we had Broadwell, which was the move down to the newer process, and then the new architecture, which was Skylake, and then optimization will be Kaby Lake. And these, again, as I said, should arrive in December. And there'll be two variants. There'll be the Kaby Lake 4+2 and the Kaby Lake 2+2. 4+2 will be a quad-core part with GT2 graphics, and the 2+2 will be a dual-core part with GT2 graphics. And these will be the first ones. And they will be, I'm trying to remember what I wrote here. because these aren't going to be the super high-end ones yet.
Okay.
So these are just like the normal family of processors. The Kaby Lake X series, which will be the, just like the i7-6700K, the unlocked processors. Those will probably be announced at CES, and we'll see them in early 2017. There's not much difference with Kaby Lake at all. The only big Skylake. Difference, yeah, from Skylake to Kaby Lake, especially when it comes to the chipset and all that kind of stuff, the only big difference is that these will support Intel's new Optane technology, which is for high performance SSD memory solutions. Okay. So if you're using, if you're a big storage guy, this should definitely
like your DevTools.
Yeah, you're definitely excited for that. But besides that, it's pretty much the same. But we will get a slight bump, probably between 5-10% improvement in core performance over Skylake. Not much real different. Yeah. But again, if you're on a couple generations back, this is something you might be interested in.
Okay, so we've got this whole new step-up process, right?
Yes.
What do you see as being the time to buy?
The middle.
The middle? Always?
So when the architecture, Usually always with the architecture, because that's when you're gonna have the newer chipset features being added, more PCI Express lanes being added, more storage features, things like that. The optimization will add maybe one or two new features when it comes to the chipset and just a little bit faster clock speeds.
So to me, that just sounds like milking out the chip at the end.
Yes, pretty much.
Okay.
And it's just getting it fully optimized, because then we go back to the next step, which is just having the same architecture but moving the process down.
Shrinking it again.
Yeah. So I would say the middle. Everybody was super excited for Skylake. Nobody really cared about Broadwell. I don't think anybody I know has a Broadwell chip besides people that reviewed them, or they had the laptops that were based off Broadwell. I don't think anybody does. Everybody I know who has a new generation chip has the Skylake chip. And again, the only people who I would suggest to, unless you want to wait 2 years to get Cabby Lake, would be, again, if you're just a couple generations back and you're looking for something new. You know what I mean?
And at that point, anything is a huge step for you.
Yes. So that would be it.
Yeah.
And or if you wanted to use the new storage solutions, that would be also
something specific to push yes. you to do it.
Yes, for sure. So yeah, so it's exciting stuff. If you are waiting for new processors, they will be coming early December. And again, big part of CES in 2017 will be the new Cabby Lake processors.
X series processors.
Yes, for sure.
That'd be fun.
Yes, always good stuff. I like processors and motherboards. That's my kind of my thing. So,
yeah.
So yes. So talking about AMD and their new processor stuff. It appears that AMD is having issues, USB 3.1 issues specifically with their Zen processor. So one thing that a lot of people don't know about the new Zen architecture is that they're doing away with the chipset on the motherboard. The chipset is actually be built into the chip. So it's a chipset on chip. Yeah. So you're not going to have like a PCH or anything like that.
Yeah.
So apparently they're experiencing issues with USB 3.1 bandwidth because of the increase in circuit distances. So instead of going from the PCH to say like a bottom header, on a motherboard, you're going all the way up from the AM4 socket all the way down. And it says that, again, it's just been reported that they're having a lot of issues, and that a lot of these, a lot of the board manufacturers are having to use retimer or redriver chips to get acceptable bandwidth, and even some cases just entirely off die USB 3.1 controllers. And of course, that's going to cost more money or add to the cost.
Well, not only that, but I mean, what was your point of moving the chipset to the processor then?
Exactly.
If you need another part on the board anyways.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's something that they just didn't think about or whatever. Yeah, that sounds
dumb. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Now you're going to increase the heat in the, you know, concentrated heat into just into the processor area. That just seems like a bad move.
Yes. So the 3.1 controller was designed by AS Media. And AS Media in the past has been known for some shady practices. So that could be a reason why this is not
it's possible that it's simply the third party.
Yes. AS Media played down the rumor, but I guess we'll have to see. We'll have to see if every new AM4 motherboard has its own USB 3.1 controller on it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but usually rumors with AMD tend to be quite true.
Yeah, so we will see, but it's something interesting that's going on in the processor space, so if you're interested in it.
That's just no good, because AMD needs Zen to be exceptional.
Yes, especially in the processor space, because they really don't compete in that space.
No.
When it comes to enthusiast desktop products. So,
like, if you thought they were slightly behind versus NVIDIA, when it comes to processors, they've been way behind.
Yes. And then our final piece of processor news, which is really cool, and if you're a nerd and you're a processor geek, this is awesome to you.
I was geeking out over this earlier.
Yes, a team at University of California Davis Department of Electrical Computer Engineering have hit a world's first by designing the first 1,000 core processor. The processor has 1,000 independent programmable processors. With a maximum computation rate of 1.78 trillion instructions per second.
That's so exceptionally awesome.
Yes. So in the past, we've seen large core processors. A lot of the, just like this one, it's just developed for testing and
just to do it.
Not just to do it, but it's a lot of teaching and learning and testing and, you know.
Mostly just to do it.
Yeah, so, and it's just a lot, data crunching and things like that that can be done with this. And a lot of those have been like no more than 300 cores, so this is a big deal. The actual processor was fabricated by IBM on their 32 CMOS technology, so it's not something new. Like, again, like 14 and
14 nanometer, 10 nanometer nodes were seen. But it's really cool because it is 1,000 cores. And the one thing that I found that was really interesting was that it's extremely energy efficient. So the processor can execute 115 billion instructions per second while only dissipating 0.7 watts, which means that it's power, like you can power this 1,000 core processor by a single AAA battery. So that's it's 100 times more efficient, or 100x more efficient than modern laptop CPUs.
Wow. And that kind of says something, like what you can do when you focus a lot of time and energy into one product, right?
Yes.
Like what could we have, what could our the rest of our processors be like if there it wasn't so much of a commercial entity, I guess?
Well, again, this is very, this CPU had to cost a lot to make.
Right.
It would never be anything that would hit the retail market. It's only going to be used for research, probably, and maybe, you know, other things that require a lot of computation.
But that's sort of my point, in that, like, if this is possible, given, you know, you put this time, energy, money into it, like, without the idea of making a profit at the end, what can you do?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's no doubt that, like, well, then there's no competition. There's hardly any competition in the processor segment, to be fair. But it's definitely, we're being, you know, handed products slowly, you know?
Yeah.
Small
Well, I think the biggest thing, too, is this is the first one, you know, before any of these, any product hits retail, you have to have, you have to release things slowly as they get in the hands of more people. It's like a, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Just not this product. Like, why don't we? I'm not saying why don't we have 1,000 core. Just, you know, what more could we have?
Yeah, very true. Very, very true. But that's how companies make. Yeah,
that's how the world works.
Sadly, that's how.
I'm not really complaining. I'm just saying. Yeah. I just think cool things could happen.
Yes.
If we were just trying, you know, science first.
Yes. Sadly, but that never happens.
No. This thing is super cool, though. I'm really impressed that not only is it a 1,000-core processor, it's an incredibly smart processor, right? Like, the cores can downclock and shut off as they're not needed.
Yep.
They do everything that your modern desktop processor will do, but there's 1,000 of them.
Yes.
That's really cool.
That's awesome. And I mean, imagine really trying to, like, this would encode a video so fast.
Oh, my gosh. So fast.
Yeah, it would be awesome. But it's great for those guys at UC Davis, and it would have been really cool. This would be really cool, something to work on if you were there. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, to do part of your master's program on this or something.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Or even to, like, put a workload onto it to see.
Yeah, just to have access to it.
Yeah, that'd be really, really cool.
Yeah. Is this the actual photo of it?
I wasn't specifically sure, because that's the one that was there, and I'm not specifically sure if that's it or if it's the one that's kind of, like, do you see, if you click on the image in the post, do you see the other little thing down there? I don't know what that is.
In the bottom right?
Yeah.
I doubt that's a processor.
Yeah, so I assume that's it. That's the picture that was.
It seems small, though.
Yeah,
I mean, for a 32 nanometer?
Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's the actual photo. That's what
that was attached to it.
Yeah, so. But still, I think it's super cool. I think if you were able to work on this, I think it's something that's awesome, too.
Yeah.
If you're a nerd, I definitely, that'd be awesome.
Yes.
I'd be kind of just wanting to go into the lab every day and work on it, so.
Yep.
Yes. So we'll move on from that, and we'll move to gaming. And we have some pretty cool gaming stories this week. And the first one is that Quake celebrated its 20th anniversary this week. How old are we?
quite.
So Quake was a huge sensation when it came out. It was actually one of the first games to be completely 3D. Now, Doom and previous games were kind of like 2.5. They called it 2.5D engines because they weren't completely 3D. Quake in itself was 100% 3D engine, and it even had semi-realistic lighting effects in it, which was something revolutionary for the time. And, like, the soundtrack was done by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, which was awesome. And if you remember playing Quake games, like, that soundtrack as you were playing was just awesome. It was also one of the first games to be specifically built for internet multiplayer, not just local.
Okay.
That was a huge deal. It's made a really big impact. A lot of people don't realize it's made a huge impact. One, like, Quake World was developed, which was a version of the game optimized for slower internet connections, so it got more people playing it online. Three-way CTF add-on was huge back then. I remember playing it. That just made it so much more fun. And the popular mod Team Fortress was born out of Quake, if a lot of people don't know that. And Team Fortress 2 is still being played right now. And that's one of the most, probably one of the top, I would say top 20 most popular games right now is still Team Fortress 2. People play it all the time.
Yeah. And if you want to say all time, it's probably in the top 5, I would say.
Yeah, just current players, I think. A lot of people play it. Every LAN party I go to, people are playing it. There's always tournaments for it.
Yeah.
And another big thing is that Quake really drove graphics card sales. So at the time, you had companies like 3DFX, NVIDIA, and, of course, ATI, that you needed to get that dedicated graphics card to play this game. And I think that was a huge thing. And I just think that, you know, Quake's always going to have a legacy, especially with FPS gamers.
No doubt.
I think it's something that I think I could still go back and play it and I think have fun.
In spite of the graphics.
Yeah. I like old stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah. I think it would be cool.
Yeah, and it's cool that they're remaking it.
Yes. Yeah, so you have Quake Champions coming.
Yeah.
I don't know when that's coming, but it's coming.
I don't either.
Talking about newer games, Overwatch, which of course is Blizzard's new esports shooting type game, it had digital sales of 269 million in May.
But what's not, yeah, what's incredible is that it's free to play.
No, it's not free to play. It's 40 bucks.
Okay, I think it was free to play.
It's 40 bucks, but there's a lot of microtransactions within the game.
Okay,
and Blizzard has really made is commitment to like a long-term monetization strategy for the game, so you can buy different things for your character and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's all like skins.
Like skins and different outfits for your character and stuff like that.
Nothing that actually like will affect your leveling
yes,
or anything.
Because
like that
can ruin games.
Oh, absolutely.
So the one really cool thing about this is that it raised the overall gaming market price by 11% in May. The digital sales of games, by 11% Overwatch did.
One game.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a huge hit. All Blizzard games just have this thing about them, and I haven't played Overwatch, so I can't tell you. No. But I mean, World of Warcraft, StarCraft games,
StarCraft?
The war, you know, yeah, all yeah. the war, they just have this thing about them, and I don't know what it is, but it just, you know, it just, these games are just so good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and it's not like, I don't feel that their games are even, like, incredibly exceptional in any one way, you know what I mean? Like, the graphics aren't, like, so crazy, or, like, it's not the most perfect gameplay, but they're just so well-rounded.
Yeah, they're so well-rounded. I think they have a good story behind them as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one. Blizzard tells great stories. And I think that if you have a great story with any game, it's going to help sell the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I really liked The Division. Because they had all this content coming out to the release. They had the like live action like short that like was about kind of what happened. And I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to get the game.
Yeah, like content that's not game content.
Yes. So awesome to Blizzard. Great that they're pushing the gaming industry even further. That's a lot of money.
that's an incredible amount of money in quite a short time.
Yes. So finally, FutureMark has teased their TimeSpy DirectX 12 benchmark. And we saw this back in December. It was leaked back in December. And this will be the definitive DirectX 12 benchmark in the 3D Mark suite. And it's supposed to be really cool. From what we've seen, basically, it is a scene that has all of the older 3D Mark benchmarks being run, like in these kind of like displays, like at a museum. It's actually really cool. Yeah. So it will take advantage of Direct3D feature level 12, which is DirectX 12. Including asynchronous compute, heavy multi-threaded CPUs, so you can put as many CPU cores as you want. DirectX multi-adapter, so native multi-GPU and mixed GPU setups, all together at this. So this is going to be kind of like, again, the definitive graphics card test for DirectX 12 GPUs. Right. So, and we don't know... It should be included with 3D Mark. I think 3D Mark is not going to be something that's going to be released every year. They're just going to add on features, which we've already saw with their stress test. It was kind of added in. So we believe this will just be added in. And I don't know if, you know, the free version, if it will be in the free version, you'll only be limited to, you know, what you can do in the free version. But we do know that in some of the versions, you will be able to test really high resolution, 4K and higher resolutions in it. So,
which would probably be in the purchase version.
Yes. So, like the advanced or the professional version.
But it's good to have a definitive DirectX 12 benchmark.
Yes. So, this will be the first one. And
that's cool. I love 3D Mark. They do awesome stuff.
Yeah, they do really great work. And it, again, it just gives us a definitive benchmark because even if you're running games, it's just. Like, the benchmark is the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can see somebody else's 3D Mark score compared to yours and all that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep. It's cool. Every time a new one comes out, I'm just excited for it.
Yes.
Just
to watch it. It's cool. Yes. And this week, Steam sales started. I bought Doom.
Nice.
I haven't really looked at much because I just bought it because I figured I'm going to use it to benchmark.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I bought it. I don't even know if I'm going to play it yet. Yeah, I'm going to get a new graphics card here soon, so. I'm going to get a 1070.
10 series, yeah.
Yeah, so.
1080, I would say.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll spend that much money. But, so, we'll move on to next week, and we're looking at two incredibly different products next week. The first is the Thermaltake Tough Power DPSG 850 watt power supply, and the big thing that we're going to be talking about in this review is their application. That this is a smart power supply, so you can connect it through a USB header to your motherboard, and you can read all of the information. You can read efficiency, you can read temperatures, you can read fan speeds, and you can do a lot of stuff with the software. So I'll be going into detail on that. And that's a big thing. A lot of people want to monitor these things. They want to see how efficient their power supply is in real time. You'll be able to do that with this software.
Nice.
And I'll be looking at a phone. The HTC 10 smartphone. This is the HTC's newest handset. It's Android-based, so I get to mess around on Android, which has been kind of interesting.
Nice. And probably just like eye-opening to what you're missing.
Nah, it's not so much what I'm missing. It is a cool phone. It has a lot of cool features. You have 4K video in there. And the camera has a pro mode that allows you to manually adjust a lot of stuff. So if you are somebody, like I take a ton of photos on my iPhone. And if you're just like somebody who likes to take a lot of photos but wants some more like manual controls, that's one really cool feature of it as well. I've just been messing around with it. It's a lot of fun, and I'll have my full review next week. So nice. It's something different. Yeah, to take a look at. So that is basically it. I just talked about the Steam Summer Sale. It's kind of like the extent of my week, really, has been the Steam Summer Sale. I really have not done much. I've been trying to get caught back up. We've been behind on a lot of reviews and even putting out video and stuff, so I'm kind of getting everything kind of back full circle. So
good.
So yeah, did you do anything interesting? You had a bike race, didn't you? Had a bike race?
Yeah, I had a couple of races past weekend. Went okay.
Did you win?
No, I got fifth.
That's top five.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's good.
I've been sick, but just got to remind everyone who maybe hasn't been paying attention. Game of Thrones season finale Sunday night, and as well as Silicon Valley Sunday night, and Both have been pretty epic this season so far.
I've been watching Silicon Valley. I'm like two seasons behind in Game of Thrones.
Oh man, you gotta.
Silicon Valley is good. It's good. Yeah. So
games is so good this season.
That's what I've heard, and I just don't have the time.
Get to work on it, I guess. But
I'd rather get reviews done and get this video problem that I've been having figured out and get everything rolling.
I can see.
I think a lot of people would rather me put out content than watch Game of Thrones.
True.
Yes. True. But yeah, guys, that is it. As I always say at the end of podcasts, everything that we talked about in the podcast will be on our show notes page. So as I say, you know, check out the review or check out the article, you'll be able to click through it and read everything that we didn't talk about or we forgot to talk about. And
real quick, before you sign off,
yes,
Battlefield Hardline and Battlefield 4 are $5.
Are they still $5? Because I was thinking about picking one up.
I believe so, on every platform, in fact. Including console.
Nice. Well, if you're a Battlefield fan and you want it, what is it? Hardline and 4.
And Battlefield 4, yeah. Okay. Origin, I'll tell you if it's still.
I have 4. I do not have Hardline. I would get Hardline if it's $5. I saw that and I thought it was just like a one day thing.
Maybe. I did get it. Let me see here. It looks like it might have been a one-day thing. It's like $15 now.
Yeah, I thought it was
stories for it. Maybe I'm not seeing the whole thing because I already own it.
Yeah, well, if it is, guys, $5.
It's worth $5, that's for sure.
Battlefield 4 is definitely worth $5, yeah. I would say. Hardline, yeah. I haven't played, so I can't tell you. But definitely. It'd
be hard to not be worth $5, though.
Yes, $5 isn't much to think about. So, again, as I said earlier, Steam Summer Sale, tons of stuff on there. I got Doom for $35.99.
Yeah. I was just looking. Let's see, what's today? Alien Isolation. That's supposed to be really good. That's like $13.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of cool stuff on Steam Summer Sale. It's when a lot of people waste money. So,
for sure.
You're gonna blow money. I almost bought the entire. I can't think of the name now. I gotta open up Steam. The Assassin's Creed. I almost bought the entire Assassin's Creed.
They had all of them.
Yeah, it was like $60 for all of them.
It's not bad.
Yeah, but then I was like, I'm never gonna play these. I don't have time to play them.
I don't think that they're the best game on PC. Sorry, PC fan, PC.
Oh, they're not. I would say the reason I like them is they're a great single player game.
Yeah.
A lot of times I don't want to go online and play with these people who are vastly better than me, and then just get pissed off. You know, I just kind of want to, and I like going through a story. Like I like just like kind of letting my mind go and going into the story of this character.
It used to be for me that if a game didn't have a good campaign, that was the whole way I judged the game by.
Yeah, and sadly, a lot of games have really focused on their multiplayer component and haven't had good storylines.
Well, it's where the headlines are at.
It's totally. And that's how you get people, because people beat the campaign, and then what am I supposed to do after that?
Yeah.
And if the multiplayer isn't good, then nobody plays your game.
Yep.
So, yeah. But anyways... a lot of cool stuff on Steam sale. Definitely check it out if you're looking to get some games. Check out the stuff on Origin. Not sure if it's still on sale, but definitely check that out.